It's time to give your computer repair business website a much-needed makeover. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 138. This is a show about Linux. We talk about hardware, software, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am joined once again by my good friend, the Linux Maven, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. I'm going to take a split second to interject. A couple days ago, did an episode of My Hard Drive Died with Scott Moulton. And after, well, I don't know if it was before or after the cast, I stopped and thought how lucky I was to be able to talk to a guy with such absurd, ridiculous knowledge. And then I remember you saying before a show that you were blessed to talk to me. And I got to say, you are very, very confused, sir. Anybody can talk to me on the show. All they got to do is ask me on. I am, to be honest, blessed to have you as a host, and I can say without a shadow of a doubt, I don't think I've seen anyone grow as fast as a podcaster as I've been witness to you on this show.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. Thank you very much.
And you really have good taste in beer.
Yeah, I try. Well, a lot of it's been imposed on me from you and your cohorts. So
yeah. Well, speaking of that, I am doing my best. Insiders might know I'm doing my best to harass a former host of Pod Brewers to possibly get that show started back up again. I'm only one man. I can only harass people so much. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know what? One can turn into many. Let's get sort of a campaign, a petition going, and let's march up to Linuxburg or wherever this, you know, podcaster may be or may not be located in the country, and you know, go deliver it to his doorstep.
I'll just
send him an email.
Yeah, I'll just say people who have been aware of the network for a while and shows I've been on for a while know the podcast I'm talking about, and they should also know the participants to that podcast. Mm-hmm. And you yourself as the listener can guess which one I'm talking about and be happy to send them an email. They're very public facing.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the guy starting a petition or anything up. You know?
I'll do it. I'll take the hit. I'll be that
See,
guy.
You're like, such
who,
a quick
who started this?
You're such a quick learner.
Either that or I've just been social engineered or manipulated into doing it.
No
one can only find out.
No comment whatsoever.
But on a quick note, and I do want to say, no, I really do feel blessed to not only be a part of this gay community, but to eventually be on the show and to get to have known you. And speaking to how people reacted to you, I've seen in person at NELF and at OLF last year. You, as humble as you are, don't know what you mean to these people and what the content you produce means to these people. So just take that into consideration.
Oh, no, and one of my goals of life is to not hold anything back that I can help with.
There you go.
Yeah, period.
All right, well, let's quick pat each other on the back here and get to the show.
Okay. I have sacrificed myself here recently. I have spent a lot of hours painlessly, testing, retesting, I'm doing a little bit more testing of some gaming on Linux. It wasn't really a choice. I had to do it for the show, you know.
You justified however you have to.
Man. Exactly. Yes, I was the guy who, you know, stood out front of the store to get Grand Theft Auto Vice City because apparently nobody else knew it was going to be great. And I stayed up probably 2 days playing it, so I do have a little history with gaming. But I was listening to Miles of Gaming, which I still cannot encourage people enough to go listen to. It's family friendly to a fault, and I'm sorry. I find value in something I can listen to when my kids are around. I find a lot of value in that. And this is an ultra family friendly, so partially because one of the members of the show is a child. Let me rephrase that. He is a young adult who appears to have a lot of respect, which is not just a child. Let me say that. Episode 7, they did a show, and the main content of it, which they talk about, a lot of games there, every show, but they talked about this game, Don't Starve. I really can't even classify the game Don't Starve, except for I know there's aspects of Minecraft in it because it's a survival crafting show, game. I say show as a Freudian slip, you'll find out soon. It's a survival game that's time-based, so there's day and there's night, there's seasons. There's crafting where you got to pick twigs and flint and you can make a hatchet or a axe. You can do all this harvesting, mining kind of stuff. But it looks a billion times better than Minecraft. And it's available on Steam on every platform. I didn't pay anything for it. I almost slipped again. I showed it to my son because I knew he had money. And I said, hey, son, doesn't this look like a fun game? And I played a couple videos of YouTube on the home theater PC. And he was like, Dad, that game looks awesome. Oh, man, that looks awesome, Dad. So he bought the game. I'm a beneficiary of the game, which means I have no money invested, which means I'm really impartial. That's what I keep telling myself, too. On Linux, I gotta say, I've ran it on two systems now on Linux. One of them is the crazy quad-core i5 16 gigs of RAM with Intel graphics. I still don't understand why we as a culture need anything more than Intel graphics. And I say it like this. I believe, okay, there's assembly programming, where you have to know what you're doing and everything has to be very tight, streamlined code. And then you have .NET programming, where you don't have to know nothing and you use a plug-in architecture where there's a million black boxes that do stuff that you don't understand, but you just plug them in and they work. I believe programming for closed source graphics cards are like .NET programming, and getting good video performance on Intel is like a assembly programming. And I know that's not technically true because the amount of hardware resources to ATI and Nvidia cards is like tenfold versus Intel. But I also ran it on a 6-year-old Dell XPM 1210 with, I used closed drivers kind of thing, Intel drivers on that thing too. That thing has four gigs of RAM and it's a P4. It works just fine. I cannot crank the graphics all the way up in full screen, but I don't need the graphics all the way up. I really don't. And it works just fine. Supposedly Left 4 Dead 2 will also run just fine with Intel graphics.
Oh, very nice.
So I'm really happy, stoked, excited to see these people doing things in a competent way. Now, I understand. For some games, that's a really hard task to undertake. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hold everybody to that standard, but I'm super happy to see some people are. I cannot thank and curse Chad Wallenberg enough and his son for introducing me to this game. Yet I can't curse his son. He's a young adult. I can't curse him. I mean, worst case scenario, I'd buy him a cookie or something, or pudding.
Everybody, shout outs to Chad Wallenberg, aka Slugbirth.
Slugbirth, exactly. Super fun, runs great on Linux. And really what this is a basic. Gaming on Linux is a real thing. It's just not fully mature yet. Think of it as a young adult that is showing respect and is maturing at a at a very constant, steady, good pace. Honestly, that's the way I look at gaming on Linux. And you see some glimmers of real hope, and you see some things that they're doing that kind of shock you because they're, quote-unquote, growing up so fast. Gaming on Linux is doing very good. I will say that. Good? Sorry.
Especially with the introduction of Steam and it finally being out of beta. And we'll get into more about that in just a second.
Yeah. Steam is like Ubuntu to Linux. I had a great email this past week that is not in the show because it was asked not to be. Ubuntu is the ultimate double-edged sword to Linux. There's been nothing to advance Linux to be friendlier to noobs and user-friendly, push popularity, and other stuff like that. But at the same time, they're a corporation. They might not have the community's best interests at heart. Yada, 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 whatever, whatever. Steam's the kind of same thing. The money and effort Steam has put into Linux is more than any other company has done for gaming in Linux ever. And the Linux community as a whole should be at least grateful for trying to draw in new users. With that said, I do not know what they plan on doing with this power that they will wield. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy at least more people are becoming Linux aware. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And that's just the bottom line. I have to be happy because I can't change it. And, you know, if I do see big warning signs, I'll mention them. Right now, I don't see big warning signs. Yes, they use a certain level of DRM, which, to be honest, I think they have to, or game developers won't publish on them. But I will say, using my son using it on my wife's Windows computer, me using it on my two Linux boxes, if there is DRM that is imposed, it's near blind to me. It doesn't exist. Sure, I have to log into Steam and click play now.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't seem too painful to me.
No. And it is your game forever because you bought it. So.
Well, and see, I don't know. That's one of the things I don't right now understand. I know I have Verizon Fios TV service, right? And they advertise these things, how we can buy a movie and own it forever. But it's through this weird service that's built into our set-top box that I never heard of before.
Yeah.
And I question, do I own it forever or can I view it from you guys for as long as you guys are in business or I'm alive? Whichever happens first. And I don't know if that's how Steam is. What happens if tomorrow Steam decides we're going to sell diaphragms? Or we're going to make cakes. What happens to us, the end users? Well, I mean, will these game developing companies step up and say, we have proof you purchased a copy. Here's a copy. Thank you very much. Or will Steam somehow let it so we can still play it?
Well, that's a very broad question. The short answer to that is we don't need to worry about that until online services. So let's say what the service OnLive.
It's not OnLive.
You know what I'm talking about. It's all streaming. So, yeah, you could buy a license to a streaming game. The streaming service goes under in a year. Well, yeah, you bought the game, but you can only play it through their service. So, as long as you're not being misled going into that.
Right, so that's a good question. Okay, you just got me cranking. I play Don't Starve, so I see cranks by it too. Oh, what I'm going to do is on the Linux computer is a laptop. I'm not going to connect it to the internet for 2 weeks and try to launch Don't Starve and see what happens. Because if it doesn't phone home, or if the phoning home fails, if it still plays, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a thought.
Yeah, give it a try. And I wanted to let everyone know, most of you should know already if you're into gaming at all or are familiar with Steam whatsoever, but being that now that Steam on Linux is out of beta, and this is the very first Steam summer sale that we can take advantage of as Linux users. For those of you who are not familiar, every summer Steam runs great sales. I want to say it's at least for a week or two, but they run. I mean, like you're talking like 30% to 80% off of games. Some of them are 24-hour sales. Some of them are week-long sales. Some of them are flash sales. You know, like 1, 2, 4, 8 hours. Some of them are picked by the developers or by Steam, and some of them are picked through vote by the users. So If you haven't gone there, go to steampower.com, check out the summer sale. It's very, very worthwhile because games are at great, great prices right now.
I hate you.
What?
I didn't know about this. We paid full price. Where now it's 40% less.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're into buying digital PC games, you have a few different avenues you can go with, but everybody, you know, jumps on this sale every summer. Yeah. And it's a great opportunity for, especially if you've been on the fence about trying a game, and you know, getting that mid-range to high-range game, you know, on Linux now that you can.
Right, now let me see.
It's a great opportunity to do so now.
I'll see what I was hoping, and I don't think it's the case. I was hoping when I logged in, if I go to store.steampowered.com/summer sale, I was hoping it would like filter out and only show me the Linux choices, but I don't think it did. No, because they're showing me like even an iPhone game or something. The Walking Dead game. Oh, well, thank God I don't have direct access to the bank account. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, you can send gifted Steam codes to doordoorgeek@gmail.com.
No.
Yes, you can.
No.
Yes, you can.
No. Send them to Venstone on Google Plus and say, to show thanks, mention Podnuts.
There you go.
Cross service marketing night wise. That's how it's done.
Well, now it's not just cross promotion. It's like tri promotion because you're calling out Nightwise.
Well,
yeah. Okay. He'll appreciate it.
Yes, he will. And he sent on his Google Plus stream a great video today from his car. Quality was unbelievably good, which is what I was thinking about doing like a year ago. Now I just can't do it because I don't drive alone. So. Once again, I'm jealous of Nightwise.
Check it out, nightwise.com. Okay, Dor, okay. What do we got on the list here?
Well, in Don't Starve, you can make a dragon fruit pie, which of course made me think about raspberry pie.
Mm-hmm.
One is super good for your health and your hunger. One is maybe the most versatile piece of cheap hardware ever made. And I found this article over on raspberrypi.org, which I will say, if you just follow them on Google Plus or if you just subscribe to their RSS feed via Google, you can't do Google Reader. You can, if you need an instance of tiny RSS, just let me know. I'll give you a free account because it's free on my domain, and you can have your own Google like reader for free. And if you want to add this feed, it's really easy. They have some really cool stuff sometimes. And by sometimes, I mean, it isn't like they update 20 times a day. You know, sometimes only twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
But this one definitely caught my eye. It's a Private Eye Pie. It caught my eye because it's a great name. It's a DIY home alarm system using Raspberry Pi. And I believe they also use the Raspberry Pi camera.
Oh, the camera attachment. Yeah.
Yeah. This is just cool. I'm sorry. I just like it. I really wish I had a little bit of... I need times, really. I don't have the time to do it. But it definitely looks cool. You're basically turning your Raspberry Pi into basically a security system.
Mm-hmm.
So where you can arm it. And, you know, it will send notifications when the alarm's triggered.
But, Dor, if this thing doesn't cost thousands of dollars, doesn't that mean it's of lesser quality?
Oh, it's horrible quality. No, what it means is, and here's the beautiful thing, here's what I think the Pi is going to eventually mean to people across the world. You, okay, supposedly we're in a recession. I say supposedly because I don't know. I'm not connected directly to the government money or anything. I don't know. But in times of recession, in times of hardship, in times of need, you can only do one thing, and that's rely on yourself. do something to make yourself better or learn something new. The Raspberry Pi, I personally believe, is a tremendously easy platform for entrepreneurs to buy in moderation or bulk, put a case on it, load operating systems on it, customize software interfaces or web interfaces, which all of this can be learned for free on this thing called the internet, and you can have a sellable product with minimal investment, you know, $50, $60 at the most for the hardware, and you can sell a product public facing on the internet locally. If you want, you can, you can sell security systems to people. This is, to me, just when the potential gets realized, I will be happy, and I will never sit there and say, I told you so. I will just be happy.
Just have that big grin on your face. Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking for some Pi-related projects for something I'm working on. So, yeah, I would definitely like to get something like this going. There was something you guys covered on Android App Addicts, I don't know, close to a year ago, but using, like, an older Android device and its camera for, like, a similar effect. So, yeah, it's all about utilizing older hardware, utilizing cheaper hardware to get these somewhat complicated solutions taken care of, and with especially the introduction of the Raspberry Pi, it's amazing what you can do with it. And to think it's just a little over a year old, what will be found out in the next year about it with new attachments, new software. It's just, yeah, it's like the Wild West.
Yep, and it's going to be good times and fun, I'm sure of that.
Mm-hmm. You got that right.
Okay, I purposefully waited a couple weeks. Okay, it's not like I'm slow or behind. The last thing I wanted to do on this show was bring up anything NSA type related, or Prism, or Snowden, or any of this other stuff, because I don't want to. This is I do my best in my American accent, with my American slang, with American references, try to make this a world show. I honestly do. To focus on NSA stuff, I think, is really ignorant to the rest of the world. To a degree, I'll say that. But, you know, to each his own, whatever shows want to do is up to them. But I will say, I wanted to bring this link up partially because it, in actuality, has nothing to do with the NSA, Snowden, or Prism. Yet, the domain for this is prism-break.org. I went to it. I saw, you know, every, like, couple days, I saw it kept getting updated, and then I heard Steve Gibson mention it on Security Now. And the one thing I want to focus on is Leo has a core belief, which I've also believed for a very long time, which is, if you take anything that is closed, and then you take something else that's complementary to it, that is open, by de facto standard, by default, the open one is always going to be more secure. And it isn't that it's more secure, but we have more of an ability to verify and prove that it is secure. With closed source stuff, you're really just putting your faith in other people, okay? I will say, the whole gimmick of this website is, this is a site that is supposedly telling you how to opt out of Prism, how you don't have to be tracked by Prism. Okay, bottom line, there's only one absolute in this equation. If you do not want to be tracked by Prism, never connect to the internet, never use a phone, never use a credit card, do not have a bank account, do not have a mortgage, do not have any bills sent to your house, do not have anything in your name, do not have a state or federal ID, do not submit tax records, okay? That's the only way to stay out of a system like this, okay? It is impossible for a modern person to opt out from this system. For them to say, well, here's how you can opt out. They're making too broad of a statement. This is a way you can protect yourself some in the light of Prism.
Yeah, anonymize your online presence a bit more, but not 100% guaranteed.
Well, that's the thing. It is truly only a bit more, a bit, a tiny bit in a huge fraction. Okay. This is a teeny tiny bit. Even if you use all this software, the NSA, the government, will still know pretty much what you are doing, when you are doing it, and who you are communicating with to a degree. Not absolute, but to a degree. But some of the services they mention here, I think, are really cool. The first one, of course, they have to mention off the top is Tor. I mentioned Tor a couple weeks ago. Okay. I was a little bit hard on Tor, but I will say this. What makes me sick to my stomach is people's statement of, if you want to be safe, use Tor. No, okay. Tor is not an absolute answer to any question that has ever been asked. It is only one little part of a more of a big complex solution. With that said, Tor does not follow the TNO, which is Steve Gibson's acronym, Trust No One, methodology, because these Tor servers are running on other boxes that you do not control. You have no idea what's going on these boxes. You don't know if the software that is installed is in fact the genuine, unedited, untampered, unmodified Tor server code. Nor do you know any other services running on those servers. So, Tor is not trust no one. With that said, I believe there is some level of trust that can be parted onto it. Not 100% blanket trust, I will say that. But even stuff like Firefox, this is something, one thing people don't understand about Firefox. The company Mozilla, almost everything they've ever done is 100% open. Every bit of code to everything they've ever done, including their website, is all open and downloadable. Their Firefox Phone OS, technically speaking, everything that's on, everything that Mozilla goes to put on that phone will be viewable by anybody at any time. That by default makes the phone more trustworthy, okay? Which I'm looking forward to that.
More open platform.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is only, we're only in the first little group.
Right.
Yeah. Orbot, well, GNU Ice Chat are two other great apps.
What I like about this site so far is that, you know, people have concerns or people weren't aware of a lot of this. And with, you know, all the news breaking, some people, at least the people I've been talking to, you know, friends and family, are asking questions or trying to find solutions to things they do online or alternatives for pieces of software they're using now. This site is great because it breaks it down by category, yes, lets you know proprietary systems or pieces of software that you might be using for these services, and then gives you a long list for each category, I would say 5 to 10 minimum, of open source solutions that would be good alternatives for you. And to have it broken down in that cohesive fashion is really great, instead of going, well, what am I going to do for my web surfing? What am I going to do for my, you know, mobile device? What am I going to do for my local email client? You know, it's all here. So it's a one-stop shop, so to speak, to look for alternatives. And I think it's really nice to see them in this consolidated fashion here.
Oh, absolutely. And this list has grown probably by 3 times from when it was first put up, which that's what I like seeing. The only
constant updates.
Oh yeah. Constant updates and just new categories. There's only a couple pieces of software I wanted to mention just super quick, cause I really would like for them to become 100% drop in placements. And I know it's possible. It's just a question of when. The first one is Yacy, Y-A-C-Y. If you know what mesh networking is, this is mesh search engine. And what I mean by that is when you start up a Yacy client, you connect into a network. And when you perform a search, you're essentially searching that network. You're not going to a Google or a Bing or a Yahoo and doing your search there, where they can track and they can record and they can optimize and they can do all this. No, Yacy is spread out.
So I've never heard of that one. That was interesting.
It's very interesting. I'll say when I rant last, it wasn't the quickest search results. And I'm not going to say it wasn't the best search results. It did have some very interesting results mixed in with what I did expect to see. I will say that. So they cover a lot more than just Google does. Because in all reality, I want to say Google realistically has less than 20% of the index, 20% of the internet indexed, which is high for a search engine, by the way. The other piece of software is OpenStreetMap. God, I want OpenStreetMap to just annihilate everything on the market because it is so smart and the web interface is so nice. I'll try to put the notes. Pokey from HPR did an episode on how to edit OpenStreetMaps in your web browser. This is a community fashioned and edited map of the world. Mm-hmm. So if you look at this map and you see something not 100% correct in your own neighborhood, I'm not going to say it's your duty to fix it, but if you don't fix it, you have no right to complain about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You have the power as a user to take responsibility and make this a better project for the rest of the 6 billion people on the earth.
And that goes for any open source project, you know, committing bugs, right. Going to forums, asking developers questions, because they're not going to find out, you know, these things that need to be addressed, or at least some of them, without help of the community, without the help of users or beta testers. So ultimately, that's the whole, you know, mindset that you should have going into something like this. So you're making it better, not only for yourself, but for anyone who ever else uses it. Yes. Now, on the topic of OpenStreetMap specifically, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't there some good Android apps for that?
There's a lot of apps for that. And the best one, Sean Johnsoni,
Dirty Thumbs,
loves the app. I can't remember the name of the app, but it
Pepto-Bismol app.
It's the mapping application where you can, by default, take everything offline.
Oh.
And it was really
good. I can't remember the name of it either. We'll investigate it. And put it in the show notes. Gotcha. But yeah, if you're looking, especially for something, you know, on your mobile device, because it's so funny to think back in the day, I used to look up maps on, you know, like MapQuest or Google Maps, right. Print them out, mm-hmm. and then take them with me and have to reference them in the car, yep. you know, like spread them across my steering wheel. And now it's just, what's that? Oh, I turn left in how many feet? Okay.
Yeah. Boop. Exactly. Oh, yeah. With the advent of turn-by-turn navigation and maps on your phone, it's changed that everything as far as I'm concerned.
Of course.
And just two more things I want to mention on this page.
Sure.
Jitsi and Redfin. Jitsi, in my experience, was maybe the worst video chat software I've ever used in my life. It was horribly out of sync and horribly laggy. This was when I had 35 megs up and 35 megs down, and the person on the other side had Comcast business class. So I hope they've done a lot of work, and I hope they've improved a lot. Because in my experience, it was too painful to use. And Redfone is maybe, and the company behind Redfone, is the only company I near 100% trust when it comes to security on mobile devices. I can never remember the name of the guy behind it. Moxie Marlinspike. I believe it's his name. Redfone is the only way I know of, because everything is open kind of thing, how you can truly have a completely encrypted phone call over the phone network from end to end, peer-to-peer connection. Redfone is something, if you really don't want NSA to know what you're saying, I'll say this. Let me say that. If you do not want the NSA to know what you're saying anytime soon, get Redfone. But I will tell you, if you use this, your data will be captured and it will be stored much longer than my data is captured and stored, because I don't use Redfone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's no perfect answer to this, is what I'm trying to really say. If you choose to use technology, if you choose to have a house, if you choose to have a job, you really can't opt out. You know.
Man, you know, we just need to go cash only out in the woods.
Exactly.
We'll get some some word processors.
Trade,
you know,
barter.
Or we can get, you know, old ThinkPads and then smash the hard drives every week with hammers. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah, we can get old ThinkPads from Steve D. He has tons of them.
Yeah, there we go. With the old, like, T20s or something.
Yeah. And the last thing I got to just say about this whole topic in general, I honestly think, again, this was Leo Laporte, but he said this, like, 8 years ago, okay? One of the biggest changes in our American culture in the last 50 years, I want to say, maybe a little bit more than that, is back in 1950, for you to be a private person, for you to have as few people know about you ever existing, it was completely free, painless, and frictionless. Okay. If you wanted to be popular, if you wanted to be public, it cost you money. You would have to pay money to get your name in the paper. You would have to pay money to have posters put up. You'd have to pay money to be on a radio show. You have to do all these different things to become public. Okay. Nowadays, to be public is free and frictionless. Anybody can get a Twitter account, Facebook account, do a Google YouTube hangout on air. It's completely free. To be 100% private costs you a lot of time and money because you have to go through all of the quote unquote hassles of doing as much off the grid as possible, keeping your name off as many lists as possible, doing as many kind of sneaker net data transfers as possible. It's hard to be private these days. And I don't think our laws have caught up to that fact. I don't know if they will. I don't know when they will.
Only time will tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is one of my big gripes of all time, Cody. Best. Everybody says best. I personally feel like when it comes in the realm of software, hardware, or computers, there's no such thing as best.
Yes, but if you're thinking about the best of the best, you know, the action series from the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, those guys were the best.
Well, and they could kick your butt.
Eric Roberts with the ponytail, are you serious?
Exactly. But I don't like when people say best because 99% of the time, it's too broad of a term. Or they're just worrying about one niche. They're never communicating directly with you as a person.
Yeah, yeah. The immediate question to that should be, for who?
Or for what?
Right.
Because here's the first example. At Make Use Of, which is a site I thoroughly like and enjoy and would support if I had the opportunity to. Well, maybe if they asked me politely. But they have this list. The Best of Linux Software. That's the name of the title. Big, bold, H1 header text. The very first category, antivirus software. What? Best Linux antivirus. Okay, technically speaking, there is no such thing as Linux antivirus software. There's software you can run on Linux that will scan for Windows viruses. There is no Linux antivirus software. Bang.
Well, but and you've spoken to the benefits if you're running like a multi OS network at home or in a work environment. It's always nice to have one of these solutions on there in case you guys are exchanging files just to make sure they're clean, especially outgoing from your box, because if you get a dirty file yourself, if you're not sharing it, then it doesn't matter.
Well, okay, here's why I publicly do preach that. I privately do not adhere to that. Here's the logic. If I'm going to download something on my Linux box and give it to the Windows box, and if I was worried about viruses, the Windows person has every ability to go get it themselves at the same token kind of thing. What's the benefit to me scanning something before I send it to them when 99% of the time they're going to get it from me or the internet? They're going to get it from somebody, period. And if I download it from the internet and it gets scanned, or if I give them it from Linux and I don't run a scan because in Linux, there's no such thing as a resident shield. You have to on-demand run scans, okay? Mm-hmm. What if I didn't run a scan, which I probably wouldn't because it's on-demand, which means I wouldn't do it as much, even if I schedule it. It's there's still a fair chance it won't get caught. We're still trusting, relying, having faith in that resident shield on the Windows computer to catch it. Now, on a small business or enterprise, if you have a Linux server handling mail or something, you betcha you should be doing some kind of scanning. But for me, because this is the best of Linux software, obviously this isn't for me. I guess they mean small business or enterprise when they're talking about antivirus.
Well, let me kind of spin off that for just a second, and I'll mention another story which kind of which I'm sure would throw you for the same loop in this regard. I will say that looking over this list very quickly, it's meant for either new Linux users or people thinking of implementing Linux either into their home or business. Much like Logitech recently said that now most of their hardware or some of their higher end hardware is now Linux compatible. Mm-hmm. To which basically everyone I know went, yeah, it's always been compatible.
Yeah.
But it's more of a marketing term. Yep. Just like the story is, it's all marketing. In the case of the Logitech products being, you know, Linux friendly, well, they're all either USB. I mean, they're either USB or Bluetooth, so you have, you know, from day one, they've been covered.
Exactly.
But if someone is thinking about changing OSs, they probably think about changing hardware. Is my monitor Linux friendly? You know, you hear things like that. Like, I've worked retail. I've had someone ask me, literally, if they need to be online to charge one of their devices.
Right.
It's all about perspective.
Well, I agree.
But ultimately, these people want to sell things. Obviously, you know, this article was written for a site that is ad-supported, so they're getting clicks.
Yeah.
But we can immediately kind of, you know, crumple our fist a little bit and just go, how could they possibly? But you just got to realize, oh, yeah, some people don't know that.
Well, I wish the article was called Great Linux Software You Should Know About or Great Linux Software Choices.
Well, okay, well, let me be the devil's advocate. Look at those Linux antivirus solutions there.
Uh-huh.
Or those labeled Linux antivirus solutions.
Uh-huh.
Are there any ones better than those four?
There's no other ones.
Well, there you go. So those are the best.
But there's no other ones because they don't exist.
Make use of, you can send checks to, anyway.
Right. And I would say...
But I'm looking at, I'm not familiar with the firewall applications. I am familiar with file recovery. You guys have test disk, photo rec, exactly. AD rescue, mono rescue, dude, safe copy. I mean, those are all awesome.
There is some great applications on this list, which is why I wanted to bring it up. There is DD rescue, photo rec, test disk, mondo rescue are some of the industry's best file recovery pieces of software, period.
Yes.
Bar none. Okay. And backup tool, backup P, crash plan, rsync, system maintenance, system monitor.
System maintenance.
I don't think either one of those are system
maintenance. Ubuntu Tweak is great, but I wouldn't call it a maintenance tool.
A
it's more of a customization.
Yeah. BleachBit is a system maintenance tool.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is like C Cleaner, which I keep calling CC Cleaner, but it's just C Cleaner.
Well, Door, here's what you do. Okay, we were talking about last week. You know, time is money. You know, spend your support with your dollars. Put your money and your time where your mouth is. Write up a follow up to this and submit it to make use of, and then potentially get a writing gig from
it. Can't write anything.
All you gotta do is hold on to the handle so you don't fly off of it.
No, I can't write
anything. Or you could dictate it to me on Voxer. I'll type it out, submit it in your name.
I'll dictate it on
Voxer. And we'll share the profits.
Yeah.
There you go. Dude, I could be your ghostwriter, man. We could make this happen.
What's our name going to be? Got to have a good name.
What's our name going to be? What's your middle name?
Corcoran.
Corcoran? Or Cochran?
Corcoran.
Corcoran. Ending with an N?
C-O-R-C-O-R-A-N. Corcoran.
Okay,
that's
so
how,
James Corcoran.
That's how my grandfather said it. That's how I said it.
Yeah, James Corcoran. That's our name.
James Corcoran. Done.
There you go. All right.
Okay. I guess. it's not CC Cleaner. Martin, sorry, he just posted in the chat. It's, I always call it CC Cleaner. It isn't CCCLENER. It's just CCLENER. C Cleaner.
Right. Like keep like ATM machine.
I know. Exactly. I can't stop that. You know, just like, and it irritates me so much every time I say it. Okay, yeah, okay. We got to change gears.
Yep.
I don't comprehend this at all. Okay. I have no problem admitting when something is above my head. Okay. This is quite above my head. A very interesting, I never go to wired.com. Note, ever go to wired.com. Ever. I followed a link to wired.com. Okay. Ex-Google man brings Linux to world of networking. What? Okay, what? What? We've been in networking. Before Windows even acknowledged the internet exists, we were multi-user, network-aware, remote session capable. So this title of this article confused me so much.
Do you have splinters in your fingers again?
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, because you just flew off the handle again. I know. Man. It's all marketing. It's all buzz. It's all spin.
I know, but
it's not worth the high blood pressure, man.
Too late. Too late to say that.
You don't take pills as it is.
Too late to say that.
All right. Okay.
Here was the gist of it. Okay. This guy who used to work for Google is basically getting into the business of making insanely high end networking equipment that's all based off of Linux.
Good.
This is a insanely hard market to tackle. And it's only because the competition that is already in existence is very mature. It's been around a long time. But if there's anybody who I think can do it, it's a guy who was initially smart enough to get hired by Google. You know what I mean? Because it's Google. They don't hire dummies. You know? And he's going bald, so I feel sympathy for him. But I just thought this was kind of the thing. It's basically like Cisco switches, which proof the people who spend money don't know what they're doing, number one. And proof, Cisco has unbelievable mind share and lock-in, okay? You buy a piece of Cisco equipment, and by default, you only get, and I'm 99% sure about this, a 90-day warranty, period.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that at all. Right?
If it breaks after 91 days, you're on your own. And this is insanely expensive equipment. This is like the size of three routers. And essentially, it's doing the job of a router to the layman. It does more advanced things than that. But essentially, it's like a router. Yet, it will cost $20,000. Okay?
Throw some DDWRT on it, man. Well, crank it to 11.
Yeah. Well, it's because Cisco can do a lot of insane degrees of network management. Okay?
Right.
And it's super easy to manage. And I say easy because it's actually not, because everybody who even have PhDs has to go to the Cisco training to understand what it's doing. But once you know one Cisco thing, you know Cisco kind of thing. And they are the market leader. Nobody else is even close to owning that market except Cisco. Right. So if any competition...
Yeah, there is no Coke and Pepsi. There is no Coke and Pepsi there.
There's just Coke.
It's all just... Yep.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Pepsi. What's Pepsi? Mm-hmm. I never heard of Pepsi.
What, a blue can? Right. What?
So...
Those things perspire more anyway. Who needs them?
So, and here's the thing. It isn't that I like this guy's company. It isn't that I don't like Cisco. It doesn't matter. I just want competition. You know what I mean? And if this guy can do it... He gets my seal of approval.
Well, I wish him the best of luck, and it's kind of much what you were speaking about earlier, you know, taking open source hardware. Well, not really open source hardware, but, you know, I mean, taking Raspberry Pi, you know, an essentially blank board, making a hardware solution out of it with other components or specialized software, turning it into a product and selling it.
Right.
To me, this sounds like the exact same thing. Even though, you know, you market it in a specific way saying, oh, now I'm doing it all with Linux, whereas you probably could do a lot of it before, and it's been known for a long time. But as far as, you know, the local mind share, as far as, you know, do the buyers for this equipment in these large companies know that that's an actual option, or are they just going along right. with the contracts they've had for decades?
Exactly. Well, we've always ordered, you know, from them.
So, right, exactly. Why would we not use Windows? I mean, we have always used Windows. Yeah. So, yeah, any other solution to come up, shake up the market, at least get people to start ask questions and investigate other options or alternatives, I'm all for it. And I wish them the best of luck.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I want to say Google Plus has educated me on something, Cody. I don't want to try to say I have a preference when it comes to tech journalists or tech bloggers, however you want to put it. But I will say, in general, I don't like any of them because I feel they're disconnected. They have agendas and most of the time, don't know what they're talking about kind of thing. They just know how to speak the lingo. I will say I have found since going to Google Plus, more than a couple journalists that I genuinely believe have a good understanding of what they're talking about, and they appear to be a little bit fair and biased almost to a fault, which I know is impossible to be completely biased, but they at least try to. One of them is Catherine. Oh, I can't remember her name. She's in my stream all the time. Catherine Noyes, Noyes. She is, she posts some really good articles, I'll say that. But here is another one who I have seen more than a couple postings from. And it's Ginny Skakowski. I can't pronounce that one to save my life at all.
Ginny Skalski.
Thank you. What you said. Okay. She's
Skalski.
Yeah. She's posted more than a couple things that I've seen. One, it's at opensource.com. Okay. More than a couple people who you know, and I know, and you know that I know, and I know that you know, but I don't know if you know, post to opensource.com. It seems to be a very free, in capital and lowercase f, place to post content. And Jenny does. And I found this article there, and I had to share with everybody. If you want to advance your Linux training courses, you can win a Linux training course in 300 words or less. The Linux Training Scholarship Program is basically having an event. Midnight Pacific Time, July 23rd. Which is at least a week away. Even after this gets posted, it's still going to be at least a week away. 300 words is not hard. Okay? Mm-mm. If you want some free Linux training, go to opensource.com. Ginny, what you said.
Skalski.
Thank you.
Here, look. Say it with me real quick. Say skull.
Oh, it's L. Skalski.
There you go. Yeah.
Sorry.
See, there you go.
I blame it on small text.
Yeah.
Did that sound believable?
Or your bad eyes.
Yeah. Did that sound believable?
Yeah, oh, good. Hey, man. It's all shades of gray in the end.
Sure. As long as it's not 50 shades of gray.
Well, it's all shades of gray to me because I'm colorblind.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
What?
Opensource.com. Ginny Skalski. Win a Linux tracing training course in 300 words or less, or of course you can always go to podnuts.com/LTROUF138. Maybe
that's
yeah, good.
LFTROU.
Shop's close enough.
I know.
Go there, look at the show notes.
Linux for the rest of us. Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. Go to the the show notes, click the links, do a mild essay. It's not even an essay. It's a mild essay following the rules, and you can win yourself some literal professional Linux training.
Yep.
And, of course, if you win.
Worst case scenario, you're still not getting the training.
Right. And, of course, if you win, you can tell them that you thank Door-to-Door Geek Podnuts for making it possible.
And Supercoop. I was
and
here.
Supercoop.
Getting you to pronounce her name correctly.
Yeah,
you're
well,
welcome.
Well, you deserve something, yes.
Yeah, I guess. At the end of the day.
Right.
All right.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness.
It's okay, man. I'll just punch you one more time next time I
exactly.
see you.
Exactly. It's coming soon.
Which we'll get. Yeah, you're damn right it is. All right. Let's pick one more and then hit emails and we got to get out of here.
Okay. Video surveillance. Hey, maybe the NSA uses something like this because, you know, they can trust it. Has very sporadic growth. And I'll say there's a couple pieces of software out there that do pretty good at what they do. There still is no one golden application when it comes to video cameras, recording, notifying, recording, logging, all this kind of thing. But I found this one very interesting. It's called Ividen.
Ividion.
Ividion. That's what I said. Ividion.
No, I know. I was just repeating it.
No, thank you. Server for Linux. Minimum system requirements. Intel Atom processor, 1 gig of RAM, 500 megabytes of data, plus 11 gigabytes per day for the video archive from one camera. I've never heard anyone be that honest about what kind of space you need up front.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially, I mean, dude, yeah, when you're talking, in a small extension of that, it says 11 gigs per day for the video archive from one camera, which does not have a motion detector. Now, that just means that the camera is like if you're talking like an outdoor camera recording, 24/7. So 11 gigs per day. I mean, you figure a 30-day archive, you know, it's just over 300 gigs, which for modern hard drives, it's not much. And then you could, you could set up a variety of systems to really only archive the motion, you know, the motion footage. But yeah, to have it break it down, because that's got to be a main concern with these people who want to archive this stuff, or at least have enough hard drive space to last a month. Because depending on if you're running a retail location or other locations, certain your local laws may require that you backlog 30, 60, 90 days or up to a year for surveillance footage, especially if there's a bank or federal institution within so many, you know, hundreds of feet from your location. So it's always a concern when you're buying or looking into a solution like this, storage space and what kind of, you know, the quality of video. So it's good for them to kind of lay that out there for sure.
Yeah, or if you want to help the storyline of Person of Interest television show, this could work too. Sorry, yeah, I had to get that in there. Which I will say, a couple nights ago, I was over at my mother-in-law's house, and she was watching Person of Interest. And I said, well, first off, I like the actors on the show. Okay, I like the actors on the show.
Okay.
Notice how carefully that worked.
I hear you. Yep.
And I said to her, I said, how do you feel about this show? She said, oh, no, I like it. I said, no, that's not what I mean. Do you realize this show told everybody over a year before this whole NSA thing that everything you do is being watched from every possible angle?
Mm-hmm.
She just turned to me and cussed and said, I never even thought of it. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This isn't fiction anymore. This is only a sliver of what's actually being done, right. to be honest.
So I said, now the question I want you to think about is it art imitating life or life imitating art?
Mm-hmm.
And she just, you know. But I will say this about Ividion. This is a free, easily installable application, or you can pay for a service. Or you can get a free service, okay? For $0 a month, you can have two cameras, have quote-unquote bank-level security, which I really don't understand what that means. But you can also have mobile apps, embed video on your websites, and have a local video archive for free. Up to 16 cameras for $2 a month. You can have all that plus cloud video archive, the ability to export to AVI, alerts, share access with up to 4 users. To me, that seems like a very fair price for $2 a month.
Well, and just a quick side note here. I used to work for a company where we had, you know, our proprietary, you know, video security system. And every once in a while, the police would request footage based on, you know, a crime in the area or, you know, a theft in the location or whatever. But every time they got footage from us, they also needed to request for a copy of the codec, which was proprietary to the security system that they needed in order to view the footage. So there were several times where supervisors gave them the footage. They would get back to the, you know, the lab or, you know, the desk or whatever to view the footage, but they couldn't get it to come up. So they needed to send an officer back because we couldn't email it. They needed to come in and get it on hard copy on disk. And I just thought, what a waste of resources. Yeah. So to have this solution be able to export an AVI.
Yeah.
Oh, good on them.
Exactly. And I'll say one of my duties, and I do like saying the word duty, at my 9-to-5 is to process incoming requests from law enforcement agencies for criminal emergencies, I'll say. I do everything in my power to give them the information in a format that is most easily digestible, filterable, sortable, examinable kind of thing. I can't picture giving them something in a format they can't even use. That's just nuts. And I do believe more than a couple companies actively do that.
Very cool. Okay. I have one email this week. Actually, I'm going to read it next week because this person said that they attached some necessary information in a file to this email, but they didn't attach it by accident, and I only sent them an email today requesting the file, so we'll read this one next week.
Okay.
Because I'd hate to allude to the possibility of this being done, but then have to wait again, which I'm already kind of doing, but whatever. Great email from Matthew Gardner, who is now kicking himself for not attaching the thing, but it doesn't matter, Matt. We love what you wrote. We'll read it next week. Just get us out
of attachment. What he was trying to do was obfuscate the path of data, so it'd be harder for the NSA to track.
Yeah, there. Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's like
he's smart.
He broke off part of the letter. He sent the like all of it UPS, right? But then the one important part, he sent it FedEx.
Right, exactly.
There you go. Well, actually, you know what? To be honest with you, I haven't checked my Hotmail account in a few years. So I should check that and see if I got the attachment
good,
from there.
Yeah, good call.
There you go. Or Windows Live Mail, whatever the hell it's called now. Anyhow. Thank you, Matt. We'll thank you for the email, and we'll read it next week. All right, Dor. I'm making an announcement here that finally, I should say, we have a new show on the Podnuts Network. It's called The Server Show, and I'm going to hand this off to Dor and just have him kind of give a quick synopsis about the show because I'm very excited to have this as a new kind of avenue that we're you know going down, because I mean Podnotes Pro is great, but what kind of topics do you guys cover in this show, or have you so far, that makes it a good addition to the Podnotes Network?
Well, I mean, if you've ever been to TGI Fridays or Outback and you look at the person delivering all the food, you got to ask yourself, that's a really hard job. The server show is telling you how to be a better food server. Oh wait, now.
Oh, so it was my mistake altogether.
Sorry, that's something else I was working on. Okay. I want to just do a quick differentiation. That didn't even sound right to me. I wanted to differentiate Podnuts Pro from this in as quick and as clean a fashion as possible. Podnuts Pro is close to being the daily goings-on in a business supporting servers and supporting customers who use their servers. The server show is more like the technical manual. We go over choices, possibilities, options, what is, why is, how is, of servers, services, server hardware, server architecture. It's like the first episode was episode 000, just an intro episode. We did episode 1, which is a very broad sweeping episode about backups. And what ended up happening was we actually ended up only talking about residential home backup. And how a server can be utilized if a server is utilized for all those choices. There literally can be 20 episodes on backup. Okay. Our next episode is not going to be on backup. We're going to do more backup episodes down the road. We don't want to do them all together. But like, we're going to do an episode on web servers. What are your choices? When you would use this one? Why you would use this one? And we're not just covering Windows. We're covering Windows. We're covering Mac. We're covering BSD. We're covering Linux. We're covering everything about a server. We're even covering Android as a server. Because that's the thing about a server. A server is a very nondescript, mythological thing. Okay? A server is merely something that serves.
It's a very broad term. Yes.
Technically speaking... Yeah. You can download Servers Ultimate on a little MK8022 and put it on your Android, and then your Android device is a server. Mm-hmm. Or you can go out and spend $20,000 on an insane piece of hardware, put it in the rack with dual power supply units, 116 gigs of RAM, you know, 15 terabytes of data in it, with five fiber connections to it, and that's a server.
Mm-hmm.
Dependent on your need is what your ending piece of hardware is going to be. So it's really broad, and I will say, Josh, Knucklehead Tech,
AKA Josh,
he's on the show.
In spirit.
In spirit. He hasn't been on yet, but he is on the show. Jeff.
But who has committed to being on the show and who has actually showed up thus far?
Well, Josh is committed, he just hasn't showed up, which
I tend
to believe he might be committed, but that's neither here nor there.
Who knows?
Jeff Owens, a.k.a. Black Hammer, super long-term supporter of Podnuts, period. Been in the forums forever, comes to OLF every year, really nice guy. Turns out he actually manages a modest network, and he knows servers. So he's definitely donating time and a lot of knowledge to that show. And then we have Chad Wallenberg, who I've already mentioned this show, from Linux Basement, Miles of Gaming, Running the Distance. Running the Distance? I think it's Running the Distance. I don't know. It's exercise.
Something
related,
like
so
that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who has at least 8 years, 10 years in very severe networks and servers. I mean, this guy, he's basically been in like Vietnam as far as servers and networks are concerned, at least from what I gather. And I kind of believe him. You know what I mean? He's been government worker and he's done other stuff. I believe he's seen a lot of different stuff in the server realm that makes him sweat when he thinks about it. So he's imparting a lot of knowledge too.
Good deal. Well, it sounds like a great addition to the network. And I would urge you, because much like what Dor's saying, they're not covering just like a commercial, you know, servers, but they're also looking at a different residential, whether it be home web, eventually home email, if I'm not mistaken, and then media servers too, which in light of some new solutions that have come up recently and some options that people may want to have, it would be a great show to kind of get you kickstarted as far as looking for alternatives or some hardware and software that you might want to buy. And just, I mean, ultimately, these guys, you know, I know all of them, with the show, especially with the first episode, it's like you're sitting right there at the table with them. You know, and you literally can't ask them questions. Do you guys have an email set up for that show yet, Dor?
mail@podnuts.com.
There you go. So just a blanket in Podnuts email. Yeah, start sending an email, listen to the show, go to podnuts.com, get the link, put it into your feeds, and start enjoying away.
Yeah, and I will thank everybody who's already sending emails. Just a super quick note, I haven't created the link yet because I'm not a graphics designer, and I suck at it, and I don't want to put subpar stuff on Podnuts if I don't have to, so I'm working on it. There is a URL, podnuts.com/calendar, where you can go to and you can view all of my scheduled events. And every show that I can stream live, I do stream live on Google Hangouts.
Mm-hmm.
If you follow me on Twitter, I'm sorry, if you follow Podnuts on Twitter, every time we go live, I try to tweet it out. I try to Facebook it, actually, too. And I do Google Plus it. So if you want to catch those kind of shows live, don't hesitate. Don't be shocked if I don't communicate in the chat room. I am, while I am ADHD, I'm also very OCD, which means that I have a very hard time listening to Cody talk and read and respond to a chat room.
Well, there's an easy solution to that. We just need to become, you know, better funded, and we'll just hire Rambo Obando full-time, and he can be on every show.
I was just going to say clone me, but that seems like a much safer, in God's eyes, solution.
There you go.
If there is a God, I don't know.
Well, very cool. Yeah, well, that's a whole other podcast, buddy.
Exactly.
All right, so the server show, check it out. Speaking of other shows on the network, we have had some people respond to our Podnuts Daily request for guests. Thank you very much. We got some good guests lined up. So that show is ramping back up full speed. However, we still want to get, you know, a good amount of guests booked to keep make sure it goes full speed. So if you are interested in coming on Podnuts Daily, please email me at cody@podnuts.com, and I'll send you a list of available dates. If you are just a computer tech, or if you have a product that you'd like to talk about, or, you know, your website in relation to computer repair, we can either put you on Podnuts or Podnuts Daily, and you can help us fill out our summer schedule, which we'd really appreciate, because I know we have a lot of really good people in the community who haven't been on shows yet. And I got to tell you, from my personal experience, you know, I was just a listener at one point, and I went on to Podnuts Daily, and look at where I am now. You know, it's always a gateway to become more well-known, or to just get in more conversations with more people, especially in this community, which is so great. I know that it can get bigger, and it can get bigger with more people contributing in different ways. So if you have the need or the time, we would appreciate it, and we're looking forward to who we can bring on these shows in the future. So once again, if you're interested, please email me, cody@podnuts.com, and I'll make it happen for you. Okay, Dor, where can we find you?
Just go to podnuts.com. If you want to communicate with me, the easiest and most frictionless way is mail at podnuts.com, or hit me up on Google Plus. And don't forget, if you want to send a... Did you already say the voicemail number?
No, I haven't yet. I will.
I would love to play more voicemails. I will say this. I know I've gotten a couple in the past. If I only get one or two a month, it's really hard for me to remember to play them. And this is not an excuse. This is a simple fact. I'm a repeat guy. I wake up every morning. I do the same thing. If tomorrow I have to do this one thing and my wife has any faith in me to do this one thing, I guarantee you I will forget it, because I don't do it every morning. If we get voicemails every week, I guarantee you every week I will remember to play voicemails.
Well, also, it's not in our current doc, so we've been forgetting to mention the number, which will probably inhibit people from actually calling in. No, it's not even there, man.
Oh.
You're lucky I remember it. So anyway, if you would like to send in a voicemail, which we would like you to do, because, for instance, because of voicemail, we got to hear what Ryan Ridenour listens sounds like in a variety of fashions based on that voice modulation software he was using. And we know how to say his last name right.
Did I say it right?
Ridenour.
Okay.
Yeah. So, thank you, Ryan. But yeah, please, if you want to send it in a voicemail, please call in to 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Leave us a voicemail. Try not to ramble on too long. AAA has a 60-second time limit, but I mean, anything under 2 or 3 minutes, I think would be acceptable. I haven't gotten any one on this show that is unacceptable, but you know the gist. Call in next week too.
Yeah, I'll say there is nothing in this universe is completely unbiased or impartial. If Nightwise sends a 3-minute Voxer, or Ryan sends a 3-minute Voxer, or something like that, I'm going to play it, because I know those people.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's going to be as concise and consolidated and direct and absolute as they can possibly get it. Mm-hmm. If someone I don't know leaves a 5-minute boxer, it's going to be very hard for me to justify playing that.
Yeah. So. I mean, at this point, we'll take what we can get. We want to hear from you people. Please. Yeah, because on top of the great communication I'm getting on Google Plus and via email, well, Dor and I both, voicemail is just another avenue for you. And that's actually Dor became popular Podnuts. He was leaving a lot of voicemails for Podnuts Daily.
Yeah, some people say harassing.
Very cool. Well, please send all email to mail@podnuts.com, and we will read those on the show. If you would like to help out the network, please visit our affiliate links at podnuts.com/Amazon/Newegg or /eBay. Any purchases made through those links will benefit the network and help us with our costs. We deeply appreciate it. Also, please visit the ACF.co. That is the Accessible Computing Foundation, headed up by our good friend Jonathan Nato. They are putting technology into the hands of people who would have otherwise been left behind, those people with disabilities. For as little as $2 a month, you can become a regular contributor and help that great organization into the future. Jonathan also has his own Linux distribution called Sonar, and you can help seed torrents for him, which will help distribute his distribution faster and at a wider pace. So please send us an email to mail@podnuts.com for the details, and we'll put you in touch with him for that very help. Thank you. And that's it for our show this week. Please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.